you on ETIN, Emerson Talk and Information Network. My name is Jeff Piranini, and I invite you on an exploration of spirituality. And my guest today is Paul M. Helfrich, PhD, who has spent the past 3 decades exploring multidisciplinary approaches as an educator, a composer, a scholar, an author, a speaker, and a webmaster. His interest in integral psychology led him to earn a Level 3 Spiral Dynamics certification in 2003 and an integral certificate from Fielding Graduate University in 2007. And he has authored essays, presented workshops, and lectured nationally on the Seth material, the channeling phenomenon, and integral psychology. He's also the composer of a series of different compositions entitled Mindscapes. And his website is paulhelfrich.com. That's www.paulhelfrich, paulhelfrich.com. And so it is indeed a pleasure to welcome today to Planetary Spirit, Paul Helfrich.
Hey, Paul. How are you?
Good. Good afternoon, Jeff. How are you?
I'm very good, and wonderful to have you there. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Excellent, excellent. So, you know, we're going to discuss and be discussing primarily the information that you are now helping to bring out into public awareness, which I believe this is an 8-week course class that you're offering on the Seth material. And these are fairly intensive classes because the Seth material really does stretch your mind as to, you know, how to see reality, what reality is shaped about, how it's shaped. And then I also would like to delve a little bit into some of the music from your Mindscape CD. There are 3 pieces especially, Dreamwalkers Ancient Alchemy, Dreamwalkers The Dream Time, and Dreamwalkers New Alchemy, that are all, from what I understand, based on Seth material, kind of came through you as you were working with the Seth material. And then finally, I'd also like to talk to you about your involvement with the Waldorf School, and that's Rudolf Steiner and his philosophy. So we've got a lot to cover here. But I want to start by reading something that I believe you wrote, and you say about the Seth material. The Seth material provides a set of ideas that takes readers on a journey of personal discovery and transformation that radically changes their world views. Many of us have never been exposed to the spiritual or scientific ideas beyond those we learned as children or found in popular culture. The Seth books help us understand that what we've been taught is at best only half the truth, and at worst, outright lies. This applies equally to religious and scientific worldviews that compete for our souls and minds while insisting that we never question their authority and that we deny half of our humanity, our internal, intuitive, healing self. Now, that's a pretty powerful statement to make, Paul. Where are you coming from?
I'm coming from a place that I call the emerging new worldview. And in that segment that you read, I mentioned the traditional or religious worldview and the modern or scientific worldview. So that's where I'm coming from. It's something that seeks to take the best practices of both of those worldviews, not to deny or marginalize them, but to transcend and include their best practices and evolve new solutions for the problems that we face on a global scale that we deal with every day. So that's where I'm coming from, and the Seth material, for those who are new to it, is a body of channeled work by Jane Roberts, who was an author who lived from 1929 to 1984. She worked with her husband, Robert Butts. He died recently in 2008, so there was quite a bit of time after her death and the channeling of Seth ceased in 1984, in which Robert Butts was dedicated to making all of the Seth material publicly available, which is a wonderful task that he fulfilled. And so there are 46 books by Jane Roberts in total, 30 of which are based on the Seth material. Of those 30 books, 10 form the essential canon or are the best known that were published during Jane's life, and many of us who were reading the Seth books back in the 70s and into the 80s are very familiar with those 10 books. The additional 20 came out beginning in the 1990s and just finished last year, actually. So there's been a wide array of material coming out slowly, and now for the first time, the body of work is essentially published. There may be extraneous sessions that were taped that may pop up here or there, but those are available on audio CD from New Awareness Network, the Seth Audio Collection. So the essential body of work is now available to look at and to continue to work with and unpack. And as Jeff mentioned in the statement that he read, when you dive into this material, prepare yourself for a radical reorientation of what you consider real and true and good and beautiful. And this is not in a bad sense. This is in a wonderful sense because it opens the doors to all kinds of new possibilities.
Well, I think it's a testament to the fact that this information was channeled through Jane Roberts back in the 70s. I don't know how early in the 70s that was. But the fact that here we are in 2011 talking about this in a very energetically, palpable way shows me that almost 40 years have passed, and yet this material is still really breaking new ground, even with all that we know and all the technological advances that have gone on, with all the other newer entities that are being channeled, like Bashir and Kryon and others, it just seems to me that there's something foundational in the Seth material that was brought to light back then and why it wasn't accepted in a worldwide, kind of mass consciousness way is perhaps because it was too ahead of its time at the time. But I think it's interesting that you are now raising the banner once again to bring this to the attention of many others, because I'm guessing you feel it's time.
Absolutely. And just to put it in a historical context, the first Seth session occurred in December of 1963, and they worked for several years before they even told their friends and others about it. And the first book came out then in, I think, 69 or 70, first published book on developing your ESP powers that was written by Jane. And then the first Seth book came out in about 72. So remember what was going on back in the 60s. There was a consciousness revolution happening for the first time. We have civil rights, gay and lesbian rights, women's rights, animals' rights, ecological rights, all of these awakenings of different parts of the world and for freedom, liberty, and we're being birthed at that time. So this was a very revolutionary time for us growing up. I was a little child at the time. And so there's Jane and Rob sitting alone in Elmira, New York, working on a Ouija board, and this character comes through, this persona calls itself Seth, and they're hoping that Jane's not going pathological or having a mental breakdown, and they were very concerned about this for many years going into this, until they finally realized something non-pathological was going on. So they didn't have a way to find out from scientific worldviews what channeling was at that time. It's considered dissociative identity disorder at the time by scientific worldviews, and considered speaking in tongues. There is a place for it in the religious worldview, but it's also considered demonic possession and heresy and other negative or dark energies as well. So it's not well understood. And Rob and Jane were faced with this early on and really took the bull by the horns and studied this and kept their feet grounded. Rob, her husband, helped to ground her in her work and move forward with it. And together they developed this wonderful body of work. So here we are now, 45 years later, and we're just beginning to unpack it. And so they paved the way, and scholars in the transpersonal psychology movement, John Klimo, Arthur Hastings, Michael Brown, acknowledge that Jane Roberts, in the historical view, her channeling Seth set a gold standard in terms of modern channeling, because it's always been with us. This goes back thousands of years in recorded history, and presumably earlier than that, all the way back as long as there have been people. But there was the spiritual movement from the 1860s into the 1920s and 30s, and theosophy with Madame Blavatsky, Edgar Cayce, The Sleeping Prophet, Annie Besant, and then more recently, The Course in Miracles, Helen Schuckman, and so on. But the scholars consider the Seth material in Jane Roberts to be the gold standard because of the depth of the map of consciousness that he presented. And interestingly enough, he presented many exercises that allow us to directly explore this map in the laboratory of our own experience, our own direct experience.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I also want to point out that something you wrote, you said, Jane Roberts wrote The Physical Universe as Ideas Instructions in September of 1963 during a powerful three-hour altered state that preceded Seth's arrival the following December. The 40-plus page manuscript laid the theoretical foundation for what Seth would flesh out over the next decade and outlined how your entity, your greater self, literally creates the physical matter in your body. I mean, there's just an awful lot to kind of work through there, but you know what I want to do is I kind of want to just flip over here to Mindscape.
Okay.
Your CD of music.
Yes.
And let's listen to the first cut, Dreamwalkers, which is entitled Ancient Alchemy. Where the listener would be taken in your composition. Did you have any preconceived ideas about that? And was that spiritually conceived through you? Or was it something you kind of laid out in advance?
It's sort of both. It was something I was attempting to do, and of course then you try to do it and you hope that the muse of creativity is with you and speaks to you and something comes through, and of course then as you get into the inspired state, it changes, and of course the creative process follows its own spontaneous path. These first tracks on my CD, Mindscapes, are based on Seth's creation myth from Dreams, Evolution, and Value Fulfillment, Volume 1. The chapter 1 is called Before the Beginning, and that's a sort of Zen koan as you meditate on, well, how can there be a before the beginning? The beginning's the beginning. But what is before the beginning? And Seth talks about what's before the beginning. And so we're dealing with paradox. Whenever we deal with paradox, we are entering into the spiritual realm to certain degrees. So that nature of paradox, what existed before the beginning and what led up to in the beginning, and then, of course, after the beginning, that preceded us for billions and billions of years and countless epochs, that's the emotional mindscape that I was mining as I composed those first four tracks on the CD.
Okay. So what I would love to talk about, because that's exactly where I wanted to go, is looking at creation myth that we kind of hold near and dear to, that we see as being the absolute truth, with a capital T, of how we are and where we came from, and that has to do with the two main energies on our planet today, which is religion and science. So can you talk a little bit about that? And the thing that I found so fascinating in reading your work is that Seth, from Seth's point of view, as he's talking about this, he is looking at the Big Bang Theory and looking at the Garden of Eden or the story from Genesis as exactly that. He looks at both of these as myths, as another civilization from the future would look back on our civilization now and say, they thought they had the answer. They thought this was the absolute truth in their time, and yet now, looking back, we see it was a great story that they, you know, lived by.
Absolutely, and Seth talks about the religious worldview's creation myth of the seven-day literal creation, which is a distortion, yet it's based on a deeper truth. Obviously, there was some creation, some beginning of some kind, although it wasn't as literal as 7 days, and then a man and a woman were the first people, and so on and so forth. And then the scientific worldview, Seth puts the words evolution in quotes in the title of Dreams, Evolution, and Value Fulfillment, where he talks about this. He recognizes that it is also true, but very, very partial and very, very limited. And he calls Darwin's theory of evolution the myth of the great chance encounter. And the story basically goes that in the primordial slime of the early Earth biosphere, there were amino acids, proteins forming somehow in salt water, and a Frankenstein-like lightning bolt hits them, and somehow a semi-sentient cellular sexually reproducing form of life occurs by chance, and we're all descended from that moment. So that's equally absurd. And so what replaces that, however, seems equally absurd to the current scientific modality, and may even seem equally absurd to certain religious adherents who take what's in the Bible as absolute truth. So we're dealing with an emerging new worldview again, a new worldview system, and many of your listeners are probably familiar with Joseph Campbell, the well-known mythologist who George Lucas consulted with for his Star Wars theory, and he was a Jungian, influenced by Jungian psychology, and he was asked by Bill Moyers in the 1980s what the world needs today, and Joe Campbell said it needs a new myth. And so even at that time, scholars have been aware that in evolutionary terms, at least in the world of space and time, what Seth calls Framework One terms, this emerging new worldview is coming, and this new creation myth is part of it. And Seth says that myth is the womb through which fact must come. So we have to engage our imaginative senses as well. He calls them inner senses, better known in popular culture as the sixth sense. But we can call it deep imagination, reverie, whatever you want to call it. It's something we all are familiar with. And it's through that modality that we have to begin to engage the paradoxical nature of consciousness, which is no thing. It's nothing. It's no thing. How does no thing create something which is physical and perceivable and measurable by our physical senses? So this is an incredible story, and the mechanics of reality creation are very much a larger or smaller part, I should say, of this story, but the mechanics are very important, and it ties into then how we create our own reality in everyday practical terms as well.
Yeah, so I mean, he is, he's kind of just taking a look at different ways of exploring this nature of where it all came from. And he has like a brand new take on that. But he sort of weaves a little bit of each into it, which is I kind of found interesting, in that he doesn't discount what the Big Bang Theory and evolution talk about, and he doesn't discount that there was a time when humans were at peace and there was a loving energy. But he does talk about more so, and actually the distinction that I found that he makes that I found really interesting seems to be an older worldview, which kind of goes back to Einstein in some respects. Einstein said, you know, do I live in a friendly universe? That, he felt, was the key question every human being had to ask themselves and answer. And what the Greeks and the ancient world held was that this earth is Gaia, a living, breathing entity that has its own consciousness. And so Seth kind of takes that even a leap further and says that the void, which is talked about in the Bible from whence everything came, as it says, from the darkness there, and God says, let there be light, and there was light. Well, Seth says that that void actually has consciousness itself, and from that consciousness, something, or rather no thing, became something through the imaginative power of creativity. And then he goes on to, you know, create all these little teeny tiny building blocks for creation and spinning out into that. Did you want to talk a little bit about that?
You covered a lot of ground there. But you were right, and you're very accurate. You're right on. Just to dive in and see what unfolds, The quantum vacuum, the emptiness of space, as quantum physicists know, is not empty. In fact, it contains infinite potentiality. So that there is no place in the universe where there is not consciousness, and where there is not, even in the physical, the empty space, there's not infinite potentiality for something to manifest. And Seth does... let me add a layer to this then, too. In terms of the mechanics of reality creation, Seth offers a fourfold structure, and this is over the broad brush. You have to discern this yourself, but there's a physics where he talks about very theoretical units like consciousness units, electromagnetic energy units, and we can tie in quantum fields to that. There is a biology of reality creation. He talks about the cellular level and how things work at the cellular level, all across the biosphere, all across Gaia consciousness on this planet, and really throughout the entire universe. The third level is the psychology of reality creation. That's where we get into beliefs and feelings and emotions, and the more highly developed human psychology. And then the fourth category is the metaphysics of reality creation, which we get into the no thing and the non-physical infinite potentiality of non-physical source consciousness. So together within those four domains, Seth supplies a series of metaphors to connect the dots, so to speak, of a new creation myth. And what's interesting, in Seth's creation myth, the human being has always existed, has never not existed. It existed as an idea within the mind of God, or what he calls all that is. So we did not evolve from chimpanzees or gorillas. However, chimpanzees, gorillas do share 96, 97, whatever the current assessment is of our chromosomes, our DNA. They're very, very closely related to us. And of course, then the plants and the trees and the cellular life forms that make them up are very closely related to our human bodies as well. We have elements of the plant world in us, and we also have elements of the mineral world. We have hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, potassium, gold, silver, trace elements of lots of things within our physical bodies, so that we share these with all other things. So in Seth's creation myth, he shows how there was a sort of blueprint in the mind of God, so to speak, in which there was a primordial birth agony that it had to wrestle with. How did a singularity become the many? How did the one turn into the one within the many? And this primordial birth agony provided the impetus for before the beginning and then in the beginning. And even after in the beginning, after a big bang of some kind did occur, only in physical terms, in what he calls framework one, the physical world, and the non-physical domains are framework two, three, and four. Only after the big bang, there was the human being existed at that time, but existed in the dream time, in a dream body, in a dream state, evolving along with the physical quantum fields that had to develop their processes to form into suns and galaxies. Now, Seth only provided five chapters in Volume 1 of Dreams, Evolution, and Value Fulfillment on this creation myth, so it is not highly detailed. One has to do other corollary research to connect the dots, so to speak. And perhaps this is one way to segue briefly, and we can, of course, come back to Seth, but into Rudolf Steiner and Waldorf and what he called anthroposophy. And in his book, An Outline of Esoteric Science, published in the final edition, I think is in the early 1920s, around 1922-24, he has in Chapter 4 his version of a creation myth that goes through different epochs. And this comes from his research, and he was a gifted mystic and seer and scientist. And this is something that greatly interested me as I have come into studying his work as well. So there is a very detailed 200 pages worth of his before the beginning, in the beginning, in which the nine families are present. They're called the nine spiritual hierarchies, and this comes from esoteric Rosicrucianism and so forth. So these families were known in esoteric Christianity, and they've been lost in mainstream Christianity because they're, again, esoteric. They're hard to understand, hard to grasp, and unless you have your inner senses highly developed and you can access the areas of consciousness where this information is stored, it's also called the Akashic Record, cosmic memory. The Tibetans call it mind treasure. It's known throughout different cultures. And unless you can access that and research it and then translate it into the language of your culture at present, you will distort it or it won't be useful in your teaching. So it doesn't find its way into a lot of the more exoteric forms of Christianity and the religious worldview that we've inherited and that we grow up with today.
So, Paul, let's take a short break now, if you'll stay on the line with me.
Alrighty.
And I'm thinking that since I didn't play before the beginning, and we've been talking about the beginning before the beginning, maybe this would be a good time to bring that cut into play.
Beautiful.
I'm just going to let people know that you're listening to Planetary Spirit. This is Jeff Ferrini, and my guest today is Paul M. Helfrich, PhD, and he is talking about the Seth material, that there's been Robert Channel Jack in the 1970s, and he's spent three decades exploring in different ways, and now is often a 4-4. And his website is www.paulhelfrich.com. That's PaulHelfrich.com. So stay tuned to Planetary Spirit as we take a short break. Planetary Spirits, this is Jeff Perini, and we're talking today to my guest, Paul Helfrich, PhD, who is the leader of the Seth material, that he is offering an 8-week class and has been studying the Seth material for many years now, all about this entity that was channeled by Jane Roberts. Back in the 1970s, 30 books were created as a result of some of these transmissions that came through from this disembodied entity that are very integral to understanding our worldview from a whole different perspective, and perhaps helpful to us in looking at how we are going to recreate our world in the coming years ahead. So I certainly am pleased to have Paul here with me. Paul, you know, I would like to also read something that you wrote concerning what Seth says. You say, in summary, your conscious mind is a multidimensional feedback system that works with a complex array of factors to seamlessly create your reality. Learning to unlock the secrets of this system with time and practice is what the test material provides. You can manifest your heart's desires in alignment with your intent, overcome any obstacles once you understand you put them there, heal dis-ease, mend relationships, create love and abundance. You can have it all. That feels to me like, in some respects, that is really one of Seth's underlying the primary statements, is that as you take responsibility for everything in your life and understand the difference between what you can and can't control, you then connect with the true power of your being and your divine heritage. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. And in the process of connecting with your true self, your true multidimensional self, you become a co-creator with all that is. And this is part of the evolutionary trajectory of the physical world, and purpose and intention behind physical reality, that we're here to learn to manipulate energy through this multidimensional reality creation system that we're matrixed within. And one way to simply introduce this and start to explore and understand this, I use an iceberg analogy. And essentially, the tip of the iceberg is your physical self that's born and dies in the world of time. And the submerged part, imagine that it goes on for endless light years beneath an endless light year ocean. This is the vast multidimensional source self that each physical self is directly connected to. And learning to tap into that, align with that, harmonize your intention, your will, your feelings, your thoughts, emotions, brings forth the incredible source energy of all that is, of God itself, which is inside of all of us. So this takes time, of course, and this is not something, again, that we find in the scientific modern worldview at all. The scientific modern worldview concentrates on the tip of the iceberg and has mastery of a lot of the physics and biology and chemistry, some of the psychology, but none of the spirituality of the tip of the iceberg. The religions do have a lot of very, very useful information. All of the world's religions, in their healthy form, are storehouses of tremendous spiritual knowledge and information that are useful. And what we want to try and do, and what Seth is trying to do, is to blend the best practices of these two things to reintegrate them, because they've separated through what we call the modern era in the West. Back in the medieval period and earlier into the Greek and Roman times, back into the Egyptian Chaldean period, our spiritual nature was more robust and more widely accepted and understood. But with the advent of measuring and scientific method, the world actually got smaller in some regards. And the magic and the mystery disappeared, because subjectivity was not honored as much as objectivity. Feelings were not honored as much as intellect. And intellect kind of has run rampant, and so we have nuclear weapons, nuclear power, high technologies, all sorts of other wonderful things, but there's a dark side to all of those things as well. So
let me just jump in here and say that, you know, I want people to understand that Seth, again, came out in the 1970s, and what's really in vogue right now, you know, it's almost like you can't throw a stone in any you know, bookstore without hitting something about the law of attraction. Well, really, Seth is the basis for the law of attraction. Seth was talking about the energy of the law of attraction, that you need to focus on what it is you want, and that will bring it closer to you, instead of being saying what I want to push away, because then you're focusing on what you don't want, which will bring that to you. And really, Seth was kind of the grandfather, if you will, the disembodied grandfather, and Jane Roberts was bringing that kind of information to people's consciousness way before the Hickses came on the scene. Wouldn't you say?
Absolutely, and I would add to that, because I have researched it, that the idea of the law of attraction can be traced back into the New Thought movement that goes back into the early 20th century and late 19th century, the Power of Positive Thinking, Norman Peale, and those folks. However, the specifics of it have evolved over time, and so the secret really just is limited to the psychology of reality creation. It doesn't address the biology of reality creation. It doesn't address the physics of reality creation. Let me give an example there. Fred Alan Wolf, who's a physicist who was in the film What the Bleep, and we had worked with years ago, and is a friend of ours, says, as a physicist, opposites attract. When we're dealing with particulates and fields at the quantum level, positive and negative charges attract each other. So if we have two positives, they repel each other. So it's the law of disattraction at the physics level. So we have to look at different layers of ourselves and how this is working. And to give a physics analogy of how the law of attraction works at the physical level, it's backwards, actually. Here's an experiment you can try the next time you find a piano. Take your right hand, and in the middle of the piano on the white keys, gently press down the C, the E, and the G. A C chord in your right hand. Gently press down the keys without making a sound. What that will do is lift the dampers off of the piano strings. So now those strings are open. So we have our right hand with a C chord with the dampers off. Now in the left hand, with your thumb and your pinky, hit an octave, C and C. Really hard, really smash it, a very loud C. Hold that for about 3 seconds. Hit the C really loud, 3 seconds. Then release the left hand. What that does is damp those left hand strings. What you will hear in the right hand, that C, E, and G are suddenly vibrating. It's gentle. It's a soft sound. But suddenly, where there was no energy there before, those strings are vibrating without being struck. And that's what physicists call sympathetic vibration. So the secret is really more accurately called the law of sympathetic vibration. And in terms of the psychology of reality creation, then, when we're around individuals who are vibrating at the same frequency that we're vibrating, we will resonate. We will sympathetically transfer and engage our positive energy with each other and synergize. But the opposite is also true. This is a double-edged sword. Reality creation is neutral in this area of the submerged iceberg. If we're in the dark side and in dealing with darkness, disease, pathology, fear, anxiety, anger, others will resonate at that frequency as well. So it's a double-edged sword, and learning to recognize that is a huge first step into working with those energies and then to maintaining the positive vibration and amplifying that. And Seth provides a number of practices in which to concentrate on that and develop that ability.
So what I'm hearing you say, Paul, is that as you kind of magnetize your energy into becoming a magnetic kind of energy, you are drawing to you whether positive or negative.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I guess the question that comes up for me, Paul, is where are you with the Seth material? How did the Seth material, I mean, you read the book and whatever, but have you ever had any remotely, deeply spiritual experiences as a result of the Seth material that kind of put you in either an altered state or took you to realms outside of this conscious awareness that helped you to see that you were no longer in Kansas and something else was going on?
Yes, I have, and it's something that I've only just started speaking publicly about in the last 2 years. So just to give an example, I came across my first book, Seth Speaks, in the summer of 1976. It was given to me by a friend of my brother's who gave it to my older brother, Nick, who gave it to me when I came home on semester break and said, "You've got to read this book. It's just amazing." And I was highly skeptical, of course, and I still am, as a good scientist should be. And I sat down and read this book and had a profound epiphany within the first hour of reading it. My skepticism was there at the beginning. I remember reading, "I don't have a physical body, and yet I'm writing this book. How can this be?" And my eyes are rolling back in my head going, "Yeah, yeah, yeah." But something amazing happened in that first chapter, and I had a slightly altered state, and an inner remembrance was triggered right then and there, and I knew this was a very, very important book. And I come from a secular humanist family. We did not have a strong religious upbringing or religious training, so I did not have a deeply spiritual or esoteric training up to that point. So this was an entree into that. So that was 1976. I then got 4 or 5 of the existing Jane Roberts books at that time that I could get my hands on and started doing the exercises. I read The Nature of Personal Reality 2 or 3 times. And in December of 1979, December 2nd, 1979, I had a 2.5 hour satori or epiphany, altered state, out of body, whatever you want to call it, that was unavoidably earth-shatteringly providing of evidence, direct evidence through my direct experience. I remember coming out of that experience and thinking, "Oh my God, everything I read in the Seth books is based on truth." And because I had experienced this state, and I'm getting a little emotional.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was profound. And so what happens then is that you bond with the information and the teachers. There is a spiritual transmission that occurs in these states, and it's a lineage mind. A spiritual kind of transmission occurs. This has been going on in all of the mystery schools for all of humanity's history. And once you are initiated into the mysteries, so to speak, you know, you're branded for life, so to speak. You can't not make that go away. You cannot not, invalidate that. So that provided profound motivation to continue the exploration. And of course, you have to live in the physical world. And I live, went and followed my career in the Science Museum and music and so forth, and had many years where the Seth material sat on the bookstand at night and maybe a page was read, maybe weeks went by where nothing was read. But the point is, when you find a spiritual path, a body of spiritual information that works, it will lead you to these altered states. And this is a feature of the Seth material. Jane studied altered states. Seth promoted the exploration and provided exercises, a yoga, if you will, of how to engage altered states and how to keep your foundation and your balance with them. And you can do this as a lone wolf, as I did for many years, but in hindsight, I recommend that you do find a community of practitioners that you can at least share your experiences with and help ground yourself as you enter this, what he calls the unknown reality of this submerged iceberg self, and rediscover this amazing spiritual heritage that is ours to use.
I'm almost wondering, too, Paul, that when you have that profound, out-of-the-body, ethereal state, was it for you, in some respects, like a coming home?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. And what it was, because I had been studying the map and this iceberg self, this multidimensional system, and Seth talks about dreams and lucid dreaming and projections of consciousness, and what triggered it was I had been studying The Unknown Reality, which is a very complex work, and you have to build up to that one. I scratched and crawled my way through that and took a break from it and was reading The Education of Oversoul 7, a visionary fiction novel by Jane Roberts, in which Oversoul 7 is going for his Oversoul 8 stripes, and he manages four of his iceberg-tip selves in four different time periods of history. And it's very playful, and yet all of these Sethian ideas are integrated in their out-of-body experiences, channeling, and so forth, occur in a playful manner there. And something deeply triggered in my subconsciousness, playfully relaxing and reading that book, that led to that Satori. You know, there's a saying that enlightenment is an accident. You know, that gaining enlightenment is an accident. Spiritual practice simply makes us accident prone. You know, and you practice and you practice, and that is the point of practice. But when you have these breakthroughs, they are spontaneous. They occur when this iceberg system is ready to reveal itself for your benefit, for your growth, so that you can help yourself and then in time help others. And that's something why I've gone public with this all these years later, to promote this material and the exercises in it, because it is a valid transformative path of tremendous potential, and one that's just been revealed to us in the last 45 years that we're just getting used to and exploring. So the sky's the limit, and there's a lot, decades and decades, perhaps centuries even, of utility left in this body of work.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd also like to touch upon aspect psychology, and I'd like to, again, read from your writings. You say, additionally, Jane Roberts made a unique contribution to the field of what was called para or transpersonal psychology during her lifetime. She discovered what she called the nuclear self, an expanded version of Seth's subconscious mind that reached far deeper than anything earlier psychologists like James, Freud, or Jung had discovered. For example, it goes deeper to transcend, yet include what Jung calls the collective unconscious and archetype. So could you talk a little bit, we've got about 5 minutes remaining, aspect psychology and what Seth and Jane Roberts have to say about that?
Certainly. Jane wrote three books that are known as the aspect psychology books, Adventures in Consciousness, Psychic Politics, and The God of Jane. And it was her attempt to phenomenologically observe her own experience through introspection and come up with an outline of a theory to explain what the hell was going on with her. And they're all brilliant books, and they all have wonderful anecdotes and her interpretations. And you see a Jane Roberts who's very grounded, very determined, very skeptical, with incredible strong will, even though she was all of 105 pounds soaking wet. And one of her theoretical constructs that is nowhere in the transpersonal literature is what she called, as you mentioned, the nuclear self. It was her attempt at the subconscious layer. If we just harken back to the iceberg analogy, the mediating layer between the surface of the water and the air and underneath the water is a third level, or of what we can call the subconscious, which handles a lot of information, everything from your hair growing to your food digesting to the sound of a car going by that you don't even notice, but it's there and it's registered, and under hypnosis we know you can access things and remember things like that. So in the subconscious area, Seth introduced another very broad topic, and just briefly, that he called probable selves. And essentially, it's the road not taken is actually taken in terms of the submerged part of your multidimensional self. All probable variations of events are explored by your soul, by the entity level. And so Jane was pondering, how on earth can this psychological structure of the soul or psyche or entity organize and function and manage all of this complexity? So she came up with this construct that she called the nuclear self, in which all of the probable selves for a single lifetime, so it's just for Jeff or for Paul, are managed at this layer. And it's a brilliant theoretical construct, and then that's just a gateway then to the inner self and into the soul and deeper levels. So the aspects then relate to your probable selves. It relates to your other lifetimes. So we get into reincarnation. There's something called counterparts, which we don't have time to get into today, but it's in the reincarnational framework of other selves from your soul that overlap in history. They're simultaneously born into the world of time. So this is an utterly original idea that I've not found in any other esoteric body of work to date, though it has to be there, and I will keep looking for it. And so aspect psychology is just a framework. Jane was not an academic. She was a writer. And so it's a very simple yet powerful outline that I think offers a unique contribution to the literature.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, her 30-plus books stand by themselves as being something unique in this whole exploration of exploring something outside of our five-sense reality and really, along with Robert A. Monroe and Journeys Out of the Body, these people were pioneers and trailblazers, for lack of a better term. And I just want to thank you, Paul Helfrich, for being my guest and giving us a little bit of a window as to this important information that is now coming to light because of the good work that you're doing to bring it to people's attention in this 8-week class that you're now going to be offering.
Yes, and just a quick word on the class. It begins June 14th, and our early bird registration date is May 31st, next Tuesday. So if you're interested, check out newworldview.com. All of the information is there. The course is called Seth Revealed, Learn the Secrets of Conscious Creation. It's an 8-week online class, 2-hour classes over 8 weeks in which we're going to explore your true self, your place in the world, and how we can all live in harmony as broad themes in which to organize a great overview of all the Seth material, its map of consciousness and the practices and exercises that you can use to explore yourself.
Well, thank you again, Paul, for being my guest, and many blessings on the path with that class. I'm sure a lot of people will be awakened.
Thank you so much for having me, Jeff.
And my guest today on Planetary Spirit was Paul Helfrich, PhD, who has explored the Seth material for more than 30 years and has been a regular attendee of Seth conferences and related gatherings since 1996. He's also the composer of a set of music entitled Mindscape. And his website is www.paulhelfrich.com. That's PaulHelfrich. And coming up, my guest will be Patricia Albere, who is the founder of the Evolutionary Collective website and radio host for the New Edge series. So stay tuned for that on the 31st. And if you're enjoying this program and would like to access past interviews, go to planetary-spirits.com for on-demand archives of past shows, where recent interviews are now available on the Planetary Spirit website, and be sure to sign up for the email list to receive monthly updates of who my upcoming guests will be, as well as the quarterly newsletter. And so, this is Jeff Serenini, saying, have a blessed day.